This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hi-yo. Welcome to Kids Booth Tales. My brother name is Ollie and I'm Die Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
Hello and welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. I am your host, Jordan. I'm a mum of two. I have Jai, who is 3.5, and Ali, who is 21 months. We live in Papamoa in New Zealand, and I also have a business baby, which is Your Birth Project. Your Birth Project is my online hypnobirthing course designed to help you create your best birth. It is also an online store full of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum related products that you need to go and check out. So if you're pregnant, or you know someone who's pregnant, make sure you go and check out Your Birth Project, because yeah, there are so many things there for creating your best birth and having your best pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experience. Whew, goodness me, it feels like it's been a big week. I know I've owed you an episode for a while, and I have really just wanted to take some time to get this episode ready for you with Hannah for release. I've been unwell, the kids have been unwell, Joe's started a new job. I feel like we've had lots of life changes in the last sort of 4 weeks from a behind the scenes perspective. So definitely have struggled in getting these podcast episodes out, but I will become more consistent again, and I'm just allowing myself some grace with the timing of everything. But I did really love recording this episode with Hannah. I've followed Hannah on social media for quite a while, and she's actually from the same place in New Zealand as me. And I just have really enjoyed following her journey with Real Rad Food and her journey into motherhood. So I know you're going to love this episode. Hannah shares with us about her pregnancy experience, also selling her business as part of her pregnancy, and how that impacted her pregnancy and sort of newborn or postpartum period. And then how life has been over the last sort of 6 weeks with baby Winnie. And yeah, I just loved recording this. So I know you're going to enjoy it. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you want to find me on socials, you can do that at Kiwi Birth Tales or at Your Birth Project. Or you can always flick me an email, Jordan with a Y at kiwibirthtales.com. So that's Jordan at kiwibirthtales.com. Okay, enjoy the episode. Let's jump into it. I'd love to hear how you find it. Super grateful that you've chosen to have me in your ears today. And yeah, I hope you get something special out of Hannah's story.
Hi, Hannah. Thank you so much for joining me on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very excited.
I'm excited too. I feel like I've followed you on Instagram for ages, but I feel like I've so enjoyed following your pregnancy and mum life journey. So we've got lots to chat about today. But did you want to talk us through, first of all, a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yeah, absolutely. I am 27 years old and I live in Mount Maunganui. My family consists of Mac, who is my fiance. We got engaged last April. And then we've got Winnie, who is our 6-week-old baby girl, and Cooper, who is our cavoodle, who's 3 years old.
Cool. And I know there's going to be so many people that ask how you came up with her name. So before we get into anything else, why don't you talk us through the name journey? Like, had you always known that that was what you wanted to call her? Or yeah, talk us through that.
Yeah, it's we've had a lot of questions about the name. I saw the name for the first time when I was probably like 8 weeks pregnant, and it was actually, I'm not sure if you follow her or you've heard of her, but Sarah Lynn, I think her name is on Instagram. She owns, she has the diamond shop in Auckland, and her business partner, who's an older man, maybe in his like 70s, I don't want to say he's too old, but he's definitely of the older generation. And his name is Wynn. And I saw that and I was like, that is so cool. And I really thought that we were having a boy. And I was like sold on it for a boy named Wynn, just W-I-N. And then we found out that we were having a girl. And I was like, well, it kind of actually works. And like, when I think of Wynn, I thought of like, maybe like the Wynn Hamlin brand. And I was like, that's kind of feminine. And anyways, then it was just about A, convincing Matt, because it took a bit of convincing, to be honest. And also B, figuring out how we wanted to spell it. So I don't know why we chucked another N on the end. We just decided to. And Mac really wanted her name to be Winnie, but we sort of settled in the middle that we pretty much just call her Winnie, but her name is Wynn. That's, I guess, the origins of her name. I messaged Sarah on Instagram being like, I've named my child after your boss.
So good. I love it. It's such a unique name that, I haven't heard before, but I do know who you're talking about, so it's funny now that you reference like his name. I'm like, oh yeah, of course, I have heard Sarah talk about him on her Instagram. So very cool. Okay, amazing. So let's go back to the start then. Talk us through what the journey to pregnancy was like for you and Mac.
Yeah, so we, as I said, we got engaged in April and we set our wedding date for December of this year. And then we sort of, I have always wanted to be a mum, and I had gone through periods of like trying to convince Mac earlier on in our relationship, but then I'd sort of like put it on the back burner, and we hadn't thought about it for like a little while. I thought that it was probably going to happen after we had the wedding, but then we sort of were just thinking in terms of our timeline with like our careers and whatnot. And we thought, well, maybe we should. It was in about, I guess, June or July. And I was like, maybe we should like give this a crack for 3 months, because I'm like a very like logistic, like black and white person. I was like, if we gave this a crack for 3 months, like she'd be of a good age at the wedding, and I'd be able to sort of like be in a bit more of an understanding of my new role as a mother by the time that the wedding came around. But if it took us longer than three, which I really thought it would, we would like go back and start to be careful again with forms of contraception. But I was like, let's like give it a crack. It would be amazing if it happened. If it doesn't, then we'll try after the wedding. So that conversation was probably had in June. We also moved out of like an apartment and into like more of a family home, and it just like felt like, you know, no time's ever right, and let's give it a crack. And I furthermore to that, I had a history like ever since I was 18 years old of amenorrhea, so loss of period when I went through university, and there was like a 5-year period of time where I didn't have a physical period. So I always had like a niggling thought in the back of my mind that it was going to be a hard journey for us because of the hormonal imbalances I had sort of had throughout my early 20s. So I was like, you know, like, let's try, because this is going to take ages, was just what I always thought. We ended up falling pregnant like on the very first month of trying, which like I know, saying that, I've got so many people around me that have still have struggles with fertility, and it has been hard sometimes to, I guess, say that, and you feel a certain way about who you want to say that to. And I know that people listening to this podcast are probably, you know, trying and it's not happening for them, or they've had losses, all that sort of thing. So I'm very conscious of that, but it did happen quickly for us, and it was like the most surreal thing ever, because I always thought that I was going to be in the, you know, camp of fertility issues. So that first month that we started trying, I was again like the very logistical numbers person and like control freak I am. I did like went to the chemistry house, like got the ovulation sticks. I'd been tracking my periods on Flow, but once I tested my ovulation was actually quite a bit later than what Flow thought it was. So I think having those sticks was really helpful. And it's actually quite funny. My mum is a nurse, and I had, she works at a urology clinic, so she often can write me just scripts to get certain bloods done. And I had asked her, from the guidance of Sarah from Your Monthly, she's been mentioned on your podcast a few times before. She's a dietitian in the hormonal space, but I had worked with her, and she's a good friend of mine. But she had I just wasn't, I really wanted to know if, like, yes or no, I was ovulating or not. And so that month that we ended up falling pregnant, I had asked my mum to give me like a script to get a blood test of, was it like my progesterone to see if I had ovulated? Yeah. Anyways, and I think I took that test like on like 3 days after my period or something. And it came back that I had ovulated. And then I think about 4 days after I got the blood results that I had ovulated, and we were really stoked with just the results that I had ovulated, I found out that I was actually pregnant. So I was pregnant when I took that blood test.
Yeah, amazing. And did you, like, did you do just one of the standard pregnancy tests at home? And can you remember the feeling of, like, seeing the positive pregnancy test?
Yeah, so this is actually quite a funny one, because so I just, yeah, had the at-home pregnancy test. It was, I don't know, like the light pink first response or something. And it was like, it was a Monday and I was at work, and I knew that we had given it like a really decent crack, because I was like, we're going to try for 3 months and I'm going to try and get pregnant. And so it was in my mind of like, this would be amazing if it happened, but wasn't expecting it. Anyways, I was sitting at work and I was just like, squeeze it, like feeling my boobs, because I was like, my boobs feel sore, and I typically don't have sore boobs when I'm about to get my period. So it was a little bit weird, and I just like kept feeling my boobs, but just like was like, maybe something, maybe not. And I can't remember, I think I stopped on my way home at Chemist Warehouse to get a test. I don't think I had any. So I stopped on my way home, but I also like knew that it was, I knew that you're supposed to do it like first pee of the day is when you get the most accurate result. And I also knew that I was really early to find, if I were to find out, it would be really early. So I was like, oh, it's probably not going to show it even if I am, because it's the afternoon, X, Y, and Z. And then got home, Mac was home from work already. And I was like, my boobs are sore, like, I'm going to do a test. Did the test and then like went back to look at it, and it, I wish that we waited and just did it the next morning, because like it was the faintest line. Like I was holding it up in all these different lights, but I knew that I could see it, and I was like, if there's a faint line, there's a line. And my friend who was pregnant at the time, she had sort of a very similar first result to her pregnancy test. So I like took some photos and sent them to her. And I had done this in previous months when we weren't even trying, but took some photos and sent them to her. And then she just started calling me. And it was at that point I was like, she can see the line too. Anyways, picked up the phone, she was like, there is a line. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, and Mac still was like, there is no line. Like, you guys are crazy. Anyways, we went for a walk on the beach, and I was just, I knew, I was just like, I'm pregnant and this is crazy. But he was like, stop saying that, there's no line, blah, blah, blah. Next morning, Matt goes to work at very crazy early hours. So he went to work like 4 a.m. and then I woke up and straight away at like 5 a.m. went and took a test. And I like took the test, put it in the drawer, and then waited the 3 minutes or whatever, opened the drawer, and then like there was definitely a line. And I like took a photo of it, and you could actually see the line on the photo this time. And I just texted that photo to Mac, and I said, like, can you see the line now? And he said, yeah, I can see it now. And that was pretty much how we found out.
yeah amazing. And did you know you wanted to have a midwife for your care? Did you know where to look? Like, what was that experience like for you?
I knew I wanted to have a midwife, just because, to be honest, like I don't really know why people have obstetricians if they're like, if nothing's wrong, but like, I mean, each to their own, but I've not been educated on what an obstetrician does as opposed to a midwife. So I've always known about midwives as opposed to obstetricians. Yeah. But also, yeah, I knew that midwives were quite hard to come by, but I also like, we found out we were pregnant, I think, like, honestly, a week before my period was even due. So found out super, super early, and my friend had used Carmen as her midwife. So I just like instantly sort of messaged Carmen on Instagram and was like, hey, like, I had a positive pregnancy test. Do you have space for this date? And she did. So I knew I needed to get onto it early. And midwife was always my first and only option, really.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Cool. And how were you feeling in your first trimester from there? Like, did you have many pregnancy symptoms in the first sort of, 12 weeks?
I was pretty lucky with the first trimester, but there were from about probably the I probably had like 10 hard days, and it was at about week 8, and they were like quite hard days. Just like I was so tired. I remember going to bed at like 7 o'clock and sleeping for like 12 hours. I'd wake up and just feel like so hungover and nauseous, and just felt really average. But it only lasted for 10 days and I was so grateful. And oh my gosh, like I always say, I've said with like multiple things, like God chooses his warriors, because I was not going to be able to survive, man. Like those 10 days, I think Mac was just like, holy heck, because I was just feeling so sorry for myself. But it was pretty hard and fast for the 10 days. And then other than that, I felt like really, really good and just really excited about it all. And yeah, I was... Yeah, as you'll hear, my pregnancy in general was just a really beautiful time for me.
Yeah, amazing. And did you choose to do all of the sort of standard testing that's offered in your pregnancy?
Yeah, we did the standard testing plus the NIP test. I actually did not do the diabetes test though. So no, we actually didn't do the standard testing. Didn't do the diabetes test and did do the NIP test. We did the NIP test because I was so desperate to find out the gender. Again, like I'm just someone who needs to know all the things. And we didn't do the diabetes test because it was a combination of laziness and just like I didn't have any of the indicators and I just didn't think it was necessary for us.
Yeah, fair enough. Awesome. And I know that you have obviously a really successful business and you have been sort of working throughout your whole pregnancy. So how did you find juggling growing a baby and working so, you know, like working really hard in your business? And did you find there were moments where you sort of had to take a step back from that, or were you just feeling really good for the majority of the time?
I felt really good for the majority of the time. And because like in my first and second and early third trimester, I was still very like mobile and very like on my feet with my job. I think work actually kept me like really fit and moving, which was amazing. And amazing for recovery as well after it. But yeah, I felt fine, like in terms of like my first second trimester. There was, I think it when it came to my third trimester, there was like a lot going on with work, and I do like there was a few sleepless nights that definitely weren't caused by the pregnancy, but I remember thinking like, this is so bad for me and the baby that I'm like so stressed out in my third trimester and X, Y, and Z. And then as you'll hear, I ended up going overdue, but I was like, this baby's not coming because I'm too stressed and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it all sort of feels like a blur now. Like work was just, I'm someone who like goes all in with everything that I do. And you know, when I was pregnant, the baby was really just along for the ride. So I was just really continuing on my normal life with work. And we did that up until she arrived. And then in my last trimester, we basically, people that know Real Red Food and know me will know this now, but Real Red Food has actually been sold, and Real Red Food went we settled on the 5th of May and Wyn was born on the 26th of April. So in my last trimester is when I actually decided that I wanted to think about selling the business. So in January, I spoke to a business broker, and it was just a combination of like, I have always wanted to be a mother, and I knew that, again, I'm an all-in person. And I knew that I didn't want to try and do both, because I want to enjoy my her first few years, like just me and her. I'll never get the time back again. And I couldn't see myself being able to have my hand in those two massive roles in my life. And selling Real Red Food was always an end goal for me. Like, it's so awesome to start and build a business, but it really is the cherry on top of the cake when someone wants to buy it from you. It's like you've built something that actually works as a business and as a model in the marketplace. Yeah. So that was, I was like, well, maybe I should like give it a crack and like see if anything happens. Like, because probably again take a year to sell. And we also have Max Career on the horizon, which will probably take us out of Mount Maunganui. So there's like a whole lot of moving parts. And I was like, let's list it. And we listed it in February. And, you know, I've got another few. I thought to myself, I've got another few years in me if I need to. So let's list it now. And hopefully it sells before we need it to sell when we go to move with Max Career. Anyways, we ended up being in a due diligence period, like in the late stages of my third trimester, and then we went unconditional like early April, and then there was just like getting a hold. So the due diligence period was really intense. Like there's obviously a lot that needs to be worked out between the buyer and the seller, but then also once we realized like it was a done deal and we went unconditional, it was just getting everything sorted so they could take over. On originally it was supposed to be the 1st of May, and you know, I was going to be like, she came late, so it was like I had to have everything sorted before. So it was just very very intense that last trimester, but now that I think about it, it was like the biggest blessing, because I just feel so chill and relaxed, and like I've done all the hard work needed to do. And I think about going through those first few months of this year with a newborn and I just would be not okay.
Yeah, that is huge news, Hannah. And I know that you said, like, you know, lots of people that you're close with will already know this, but yeah, I'm just like so happy for you, obviously, that you've found the right person to sell to and you've built this incredible business. And I know that there'll be people listening to this who are just like so interested in the fact that you've sold it. So I guess, what does that look like for you at the moment? Because we see on Instagram sometimes that you're still going into Real Rad Food, and you sort of were when was first born as well. So what has that sort of transition looked like for you?
Yeah, so we ended up settling a little bit later just because of some bank documents, but we ended up settling on the 5th of May. And so literally like we were supposed to settle on the 1st, and I was going from, I remember we were leaving the hospital to go to the birthing center. And like, I was like literally Mac was driving and we had like the lawyers on the speakerphone in the car. Like it was as soon as she was born, it was sort of like work mode to some extent, just getting it over the line. But then once everything we settled and everything was done come the 5th of May, I sort of was able to switch off really for a few weeks because my employee at the time, she's employed by the new owners now, but she was sort of handling the first 2 weeks of this handover period. So in those first 2 weeks of May, I was just, you know, tapping away on my laptop, supporting them where I could, and just getting everything ready in terms of like standard operating procedures that maybe needed to be clarified a bit further. And I was just doing that from home. And then my 2 weeks of handover started sort of mid-May, and that looked like me just going into work. It was like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I was going to go in the mornings. But the first, I did that for 1 week and it was just like really intense. And again, it was like a thank goodness that I've sold this business. Because I can't even go in. Like it was really intense to go in for like 3 hours with her back to back days. And like, again, we'll probably touch on it later, but it's sort of threw us in terms of like me spacing out feeds a little bit too much, because like, you know, I wasn't really wanting to whip out my boob in front of these people that just purchased my business. And it was just, and then Wynn sort of didn't put on the weight that she was supposed to, and I just said to them there, like, I can do majority of this handover from home. So then the following week, I think I went in on the Monday, but then other than that, now I'm just working from home, just doing little bits of handover that I still, like if they've ever got questions, I'll jump on the phone with them or jump on a Zoom with them and talk them through that. But really they're pretty much fully in control of the business now. I've sort of taught them all they need to know. So over the next sort of four and a half months or so, I am doing a marketing contract with them. So I'm just working 8 hours a week and purely just on marketing support. So you'll see my face a lot less on Real Rad Food. Probably you won't see my face at all on Real Rad Food, but I am supporting in the background with more strategy and sort of I guess, slowly handing over the reins to the new owners with that, and just making sure we've got like a really good backing of, I guess, creators that are creating content for us now, because that was a really large part of my role. But yeah, basically I'm working 8 hours a week, which just is craziness. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to be working for them, yeah, for another 4.5 months. And then I'm fully unemployed retired, some might say.
You're a stay-at-home mum now, girlfriend. So cool.
Yeah, I know, so fun. And I think I was saying to Mac again, because a lot of my time, what used to be like creating content for Real Red Food, I've really found like a love again for creating content just like under my own, I suppose you'd call it like personal brand. Yeah. So it's been really fun to like have time for that again, because I really do love, like Real Red Food was created because I loved connecting with people online, and I still love that so much. But we just, you know, ended up building this big machine that I sort of was, know, manning, and my job was really quite logistical and whatnot, whereas now I can really, you know, figure out sort of what I want to do again in terms of, I don't know, future ventures or whatever that may look like.
Yeah amazing, that is so cool. And yeah, very very happy and excited for you. Okay, so let's get back to your pregnancies. So did you do any antenatal classes, any birth education? What were your sort of thoughts around, learning more about birth?
Yes, so I did Hatched antenatal in person, but that's Carmen's antenatal class. And that was really cool. Like, I had a friend who was also in my group, and I met a few other people through there that, you know, I'll catch up with. But yeah, learned lots there. And it was just like a really nice way for Mac and I to like think about baby time, I suppose, because our lives were so busy with work that sometimes you just like, I don't know, it was nice to make time for that. We'd often go out for dinner before, and it was a really nice time. And then other than that, I read the what's it called, Ina May Gaskin?
Ina May Gaskin,
And what is it, like childbirth, like your guide to childbirth?
A guide to childbirth. Yeah,
I think that was the one I read, and mostly I just read all of the positive birth stories at the start of that book, and they were amazing. And then obviously listened to like every single one of your podcasts, and I also did the Your Birth Project hypnobirthing course. And yeah, I was like, and I did that in the summer holidays, so I would have been 20 something weeks the first time I did it.
Yeah.
And then I did the course again. Well, I listened to like little segments of the course again, like in my like last trimester, sort of like a week out from giving birth, just like focused on the breathing one, and got Mac to listen to the partner one again, which he was like very keen to do, because it is kind of hard. Like, the guys really don't know what they're in for. He wanted to try and be prepared as he could, but that was amazing. And I really enjoyed, even it might sound weird, but I did a lot of Pilates in my pregnancy as well. And I just remember tuning into my breath a whole lot more, even in Pilates, and just like trying to like, you know, when my muscles were hurting, just thinking about like breathing through it, and just using what we learned in the Your Birth Project course and other aspects in the lead up to it. Because I've never been into meditation and stuff, so I was quite a rookie.
Awesome. Cool. And did you have like thoughts on how you wanted your birth to go? Did you have a birth plan? What were your ideas about how you wanted your birth to play out?
Yeah, I definitely had thoughts. I was like very much trying to like speak my birth into existence, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So I think I would say to people, like, I am going to have like a vaginal birth, and I'm not gonna have intervention and X, Y, and Z. And I was like very keen on that idea. And I, you know, would say things like we were made to do this, and like we are made to do this. And I also want to preface that, like, I am such an advocate for consuming positive birth stories. I consumed so many positive birth stories, and I felt, and I'd always knew that, like, I envisioned myself coming onto your podcast and like sharing a really positive birth story. And I do think my birth story is a positive birth story, but it did not go to plan. But I don't think, and it made me think like, oh, maybe I'm not like doing any good putting this out into the world, because that isn't like, that wasn't what I wanted to consume when I was pregnant. But I think what came out of my, I guess, change to my birth plan was that like it was actually okay, and I actually still had a positive experience even though my birth plan did change. And I was someone who was like very like, my birth plan is going to be this, but I really don't feel that disappointed by it. But like, to answer your question, yes, I had a birth plan, and it was like intervention free, natural, really happy vibe childbirth.
Yeah, amazing. And I obviously know that you had a cesarean section, so before we talk through your birth story, do you remember in your pregnancy, like, did you learn anything about cesareans? Were you listening to any C-section birth stories, or were you just sort of avoiding that altogether?
Yeah, good question. I don't think I was avoiding it, but there were so many other things that I will click on before that. So like, I really didn't listen to that many. I didn't listen to that many birth stories. Obviously, Ina May's book had zero C-section stuff in it. She was like, go for a walk or something anyways. And then, like, again, I didn't really – I probably zoned out a lot in terms of, like, when we would learn about that in antenatal and the other resources that I consumed. So, no, I really – sort of, I think what I was doing was like, I was trying to like manifest to some degree, like 100%. Subconsciously.
Yeah.
So like, I wasn't really consuming it, because I was like, that is not going to happen, and I need to like speak that into existence. So not really, to be honest.
Yeah, I get that. I think like, and I going off in a tangent a bit here, but I think, you know, like we talk about positive birth stories, and we talk about like manifesting this birth experience, and you know, I talk about a lot in the Your Birth Project course, like your birth library and what you're filling it with, and how that like, you know, shapes the way that you subconsciously feel about birth, and then that has an impact when your labor starts and all of that. And I just think it's like, it's funny, and I think hearing you say like you still had a positive birth experience is exactly the point for me of like the Your Birth Project course, for example, is that you can still have a positive birth experience when it doesn't go to plan. It's all about like having the information that you need and feeling supported, and like you've got choices, or that you're making an informed choice and you understand what's happening. And you know, like, I just think it's so important, and you are now an amazing advocate in this space because you've got this incredible online community as well to share your story and go, hey, like I did try really hard to manifest this vaginal birth that was drug free and everything that I wanted it to be, and my birth plan didn't go that way, and it was still a positive experience. I think like it's really important for people to hear those stories as well.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, I had said to things like, I said to Mac when we were discussing his role in the birth, like, you need to like, I was like, I'm probably gonna ask for an epidural at some point, but you need to advocate for me and like, and really challenge me on when I want that. And I guess, again, we'll go into it, but it's, I like really had to look him in the eyes, and I was like, listen to me now, boy, I need to go to the hospital.
Give me the freaking epidural.
But yeah, I just have such positive feelings about it. And I guess my birth plan, was very, I had a very solid idea of what the ideal would be, and I didn't have like a massive idea of what sort of backup options could be. But I did, I did know, and I do think that this came into play in terms of what actually happened. I did know that I would prefer a C-section than the other forms of intervention, for example, forceps or the sucky cup thing. You'll hear, like, we just didn't get close to that, so C-section, the decision was made. But I am very stoked with the fact that we made the call when we did, and like, again, like, it needed to happen when it happened. So the decisions that were made on that day were all the best decisions.
Yeah, amazing. And were you doing anything, if you just like jump back a step, to prepare for birth? Like, were you doing antenatal expressing? Were you drinking the teas and eating the dates? what did your sort of birth prep look like?
Yeah, so I started doing antenatal expressing, so getting colostrum at, I think, what, 36 or something weeks? And I loved doing that because Wynn was pretty quiet in my belly. Like, sometimes, like, she didn't move around heaps. But when I would do the antenatal expressing, like, I'd get like lots of little breaks and hicks, and like she'd just get really active. So like every night, it was just a nice way for like me to feel her, and like B, I was so excited to breastfeed, and it was like, oh, like there's stuff coming out of my boobs. Like, it was just cool, and I knew that it was going to be really helpful for her when she did arrive. So I was stoked to be able to get colostrum. And the first night, it took me like ages to like get 1 mil. And then I just started, I think I went to the hospital with like 50 mils or something. Like, it was crazy. Apparently they were like corridors, that they were calling me like a milk machine or something. So I was just like, this is like the ultimate compliment to me. But I did antenatal expressing. Yeah. I ended up getting that supplement 5W because I'm not a big tea drinker, and they were like, oh, just take this supplement. So I took those. I was trying to eat dates, but I owned Real Red Food for 6 years, and we make a lot of date-based slices. And I tell you, I've eaten a few dates in my time, and I can't really think of anything worse. But I did manage to, like, I would have a smoothie, and I'd put like a couple dates in my smoothie. So I probably got through like one of those tubs of medjool dates. And then I like bounced on my little ball, tried to force myself to have sex a few times.
It really is like forcing at the end of a pregnancy. Amazing. Cool. And talk us through the final sort of week being pregnant, and did you sort of feel like labor was coming? How far along were you, and then into your labor and birth story?
I was obviously approaching my due date, and I had always thought in my head, I will go late. And I think I set that precedent for myself because I didn't want to be disappointed. And, you know, apparently most people with their first go late. So I was like, I'm going to go late. That's what I'm going to tell myself, because I don't want the time to drag out when every day I'm thinking from, like, I had a friend, and like, I feel so sorry for her, because I went to her baby shower. She was about 36 weeks. And I remember her saying to me, I'm going to have the baby this week. And the poor thing didn't end up having a baby until like 40 plus, maybe on it 40, maybe she's a due date baby. Anyway, so that sort of made me feel like, I'm going to say I'm going to go late. But then when I actually did start to go late, I was like, oh, this is really quite mentally hard, because all of the people around me that were like supposed to, even people that were due after me, were having babies, and everyone was having the babies and I wasn't having the baby. And I didn't really think that things were moving in that direction. So my due date came and went. And then I guess there was the other element of, I kept thinking like, okay, so it'd be great if I went quite early in terms of like my availability for when the business settles, or it'd be great if I went really late, because then again, I'd be available and still pregnant by the time it settles. And I was just like so annoyed that I was constantly trying to think of like when the best time for her to come would be for work. And I was like, stop thinking like that. Like, that is what is like, that's not right. I just like needed her to come when she wanted to come. But we ended up having, because of the work stuff and whatnot, we were like I was really kind of getting quite stressed about it. And I did actually, that was one thing I didn't mention, I did get a few sessions of acupuncture. So I had two sessions, I think, and then I was booked in on the day before I went into labor.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I was booked in for like a induction acupuncture thing, but I ended up going into labor. Yeah. Anyways, well, I had a stretch and sweep at 40 weeks plus 4 days. I had a stretch and sweep and come and said that I, like, she said sort of she was able to give it like a pretty good go. Like I was like 1 centimeter or whatever, so she could get a finger in there and like really give it a good go apparently. Mm. And then after that stretch and sweep, Mac and I, it was Anzac Day, and I thought we were going to have her on Anzac Day because that was the day that Mac and I got engaged the year before, but that didn't happen. Anyways, we went out to lunch and we were like standing in line waiting to be seated, and I just like felt like a little mini gush, and I was like, it's not wee and it's not anything else, like I think that that's something. Anyways, I went to the toilet and it was like, it was sort of blood stained, and it was just like a lot more, and it was just different to normal. And I was like, I think this is my waters, but I wasn't 100% sure. Anyways, went down and we had lunch. I just had like a pad and it was fine. And then again, when I stood up, I had like another little gush, and it probably happened one more time, but wasn't 100% sure. But I told Carmen, and then I think it was, the plan was that if I didn't go into labor overnight, we would meet at the hospital at 9 a.m. to sort of test if it was my waters. Carmen had also said to, like, if we wanted to give it a real decent go, we should try and have sex. Anyways, we like tried to have sex, and like my waters definitely broke like during sex, which is hilarious. Then I was like to Carmen, definitely like it is my waters. And then shortly after that, I started to feel sort of like a little bit different. Like I started to feel, I think, early stages of contractions, but like they were sort of all over the place. I didn't even tell Matt because we were sort of like just sitting on the couch, and I wasn't sure. Anyways, we went into bed and I was like, I think something might be happening, but I'm not sure. So like, let's go to bed. And then I was in bed from about 10 till midnight. They started to get like a little bit more regular. And I, at about sort of 11, I think I got up out of bed and I was ready to put my TENS machine on. So woke back up just to help me put the stickers on my back. And I was like, you go back to sleep and I'm just going to go into the lounge. So went into the lounge. We'd had a fire going that day and like it was still sort of like embering, which was so nice. And then I had these little spiky balls. I had my timer and I had my TENS machine on, and I was just like chilling in the lounge. And they were, at that point, they were already coming every 5 minutes. And they were lasting for about like 40 seconds or so. So like that was the thing with my labor. Like it wasn't a slow start. Like it was, although it wasn't super intense at the start, like I wasn't getting much, like I wasn't sleeping in between them sort of thing, but my contractions would come. I'd like press my timer, I'd get my spiky balls and I'd like do my breathing, and I did that. And then I got Mac up out of bed and at about 1, and I told him that we probably started to, we needed to start thinking about getting things ready, because my app was telling me, like Carmen said, you know, call me at 3:11. So contractions every 3 minutes last a minute for an hour. And they had sort of been like that from about midnight, and we were approaching like 2. And I was like, well, this is, according to what I've been told, this is when I'm supposed to go. But I think in retrospect, well, I know in retrospect, they sort of were like between like 45, they were lasting about 45 seconds, not like a full minute. Anyways, I thought they were sort of, because they were coming so quick, I was like, I think we need to go. Like I'm an active labor. Yeah. Let's like get things going. So we exported the little app thing, sent it to Carmen, and Carmen was like, yeah, I'll meet you at the birthing center. So got in the car, you know, I was classic, like in the back seat facing out towards the back of the car, like having my contractions, and you know, in between, like Mac had like created this birth playlist, but like it was like bangers, so it was like, you know, cool, like sing-along songs. So I was like singing to the song between the contractions. And again, in retrospect, that's probably not what you do in active labor, but like we were driving along, got to the birth center, walked into the birthing center, and I found out later that because I saw the midwives that were there when we first rocked up, and they were like, oh yeah, like we thought you looked a bit too happy to be arriving. Anyway, so get there, and I get checked by Carmen, and I was 2 centimeters, and I was like, oh gosh. Mm-hmm. Like, and she said that, and it didn't really register to me like what that meant, but so she's like, 2 centimeters, like, 2 centimeters, and I was like, oh jeepers. And then so she like sort of kept looking at me, and then she's like, so we're probably gonna have to head home. And I was like, oh really? Like, and then she's like, yeah, because like if you stay here, I have to stay with you the whole time, and like we've got a while to go. And I was like, that is so fair enough. So we made the plan to go home. Carmen said that they needed to get longer and they needed to get more intense. And when she said that, I sort of like raised my eyebrow, because I was like, oh really? Like, they feel quite intense. And then she was like, and I'll come to your house to check you next time. So I was like, sweetest, got in the car, got home. And she's like, try, get some rest, have a bath, whatever. And I was like, cool, I can do this. You know, I'd listen to all the, I'd listen to people's stories where they had gone home and they had like sat on the toilet and they had gone to like 10 centimeters in a few hours. And I was like, that's what's going to happen to me. So I was like trying to force myself to sit on the toilet, got in the bath, was trying to rest in between, but that wasn't happening. And I, anyways, from about between about 2 a.m. to 4 a.m., they like really increased in intensity for me. I think, yeah, it just like ramped up massively in terms of the intensity / pain. And I just, at about 4 a.m., I said, Mac, you need to call Carmen because she needs to come check me. And if I'm not progressing, I need to go to the hospital. And he was like, yeah, yeah, like sort of thing. And then he got on the phone with her, said that I wanted to be checked. And said something like, she is mentioning the word epidural, but like that is our last resort. Like trying to be this beautiful advocate for me and what I wanted. But anyway, so then Carmen arrived at about 4:30 a.m. and I like laid on my bed in the bedroom, and there's the photo of it, which is so funny. It's so funny to look back on for me now, which I guess it's good that it's humorous. But she checks me again, and I was just like watching her face, and she was like, yep, so you're still 2 centimeters. And I was like, oh my gosh, take me to the hospital right now. Like, this is crazy. I need pain relief. And then Mac was sort of like, are you sure? And I just, that was when I said to him, like, look me in the eyes. I am not kidding you when I say I need to go to the hospital. And he was like, sweet as, let's go. Anyway, so got in the car again, went off to the hospital, arrived at the hospital at about 5 a.m. And Carmen had said, like, because I said, like, yeah, take me to the hospital, I want epidural. She was like, well, you actually won't be able to have the epidural yet. And I was like, what the heck? I didn't know that rule. Like, I thought I could do whatever I wanted. So they were like, but we can give you morphine. And I was like, oh, okay, it better work sort of thing. Got to the hospital. I remember I had a contraction. And then as soon as that finished, just, like, jumped out of the car, started boosting past the security because I just, like, knew I was going to have another one. And I, like, wasn't. Everything was out the door at that point. I still had my spiky balls, still had the TENS machine, but I was getting pretty flustered by it. And then got past the security guards and just like had another contraction, and they just like wheeled this wheelchair up to me and was like, you have to sit, you have to sit on this. And I was just like, okay, whatever, like sat on it. Max started wheeling me, and I was like doing the whole like, ooh, like, I don't know. It's it was wild. And then got up to the maternity ward. Like, as you'll probably hear through this, I just do think I'm quite a dramatic person, because like got back up off the wheelchair as soon as the contraction was over, started boosting again. We're like trying to find this room and find Carmen, and Mac, I think, had left his phone in the car. And then I get another contraction. I'm just like fall down to my hands and knees in the middle of the corridor, like having this contraction. Like, I'm just, like when I look back on it, I'm just like, oh my goodness, Hannah, like you are so dramatic. Found Carmen, and then very quickly after that, like, was sort of got the morphine and got hooked up to all the things. And then it was pretty much like time to rest. And this part is the most hazy part for me. And I did read over my birth notes last night, but I'm not going to lie, like the handwriting is that bad that it's quite we got handed over to the nurses and I really can't read it, but I don't know, maybe there was a different sort of drug as well. But basically at about 5, I got given the morphine, and then from about 5 to 9, it was sort of just like resting. And I do think I slept a bit, but I was definitely like still getting contractions, but I think that they started to space out. Yeah. They started to space out a bit. And so the call was made to give me Syntocin at about 9. And with the Syntocin, I was allowed to have the epidural. So I was like, sweet. Cause the contractions were just still really not nice. And I was just wanted to be numb. Anyway, so, and that was another thing, like, again, all or nothing personality. I was either going natural or I was either, like, pumped me full of everything.
Yeah, so, I totally get that.
Yeah, so we got, they wanted to give me the Syntocin to, like, you know, get the contractions being, like, longer and more often. And then the anesthesiologist guy came and gave me the epidural, and you know, the classic, like, trying to be still during contractions was not that nice, but it was all good. And then I fully slept from like 9 a.m. till midday. Sorry, there was probably a check as well. So at about 9 a.m. before the epidural, when the contractions were slowing down, I probably think that I got checked and I was still 2 centimeters. So they were like, yep, let's get the induction medication going, give you the epidural, and then you can sleep. And then I was like, you know, I'll get the epidural, everything will relax, because I knew that my whole body was tensing up with these contractions. Like, I was like rubbing my legs together, like I just was so tense. And I was like, it'll be great, get the epidural, everything, I'll just relax and whatnot. So I slept from 9 till midday. And then I got checked at about midday and I was like, I'm probably, you know, I can't feel any pressure, but surely I'm dilating, because I just was asleep for so long. And then I got checked and I was 3 centimeters and I was just like, oh my goodness. And at this point we were approaching 24 hours since my waters had broken. So that was, I was on antibiotics as well. But I like at that midday check, I think that one of the doctors came as well to check, and I just like started to, I was like, this is going a bit sideways in terms of my vaginal birth, because I'm not dilating and how can I be any more relaxed down there? But she wasn't, I think she at that point was having some like D-cells is maybe what they were calling it. Like she, like, her heart was just starting to not cope that well, but it wasn't super, it was okay. So they decided at that point alongside the doctor to, like, I think they like doubled my Syntocin. And they were like, okay, we want to see you progress like a centimeter every half an hour from now. I'm pretty sure was what the aim was. I was like, okay, sweet. Like, hopefully this works. And then they left us again, and basically between about 12 and 3 p.m., her heart struggled with the increase in Syntocin. So we were sort of in between a rock and a hard place. Like, they couldn't give me more Syntocin because her heart wasn't really coping with it, but I still wasn't progressing. And they did this little test on the top of her head, and they could tell that the head was swollen, and I think it was a blood test. I don't think that the blood results showed anything major, but the swelling of the head like wasn't a great sign for them. And also the fact that it got to 3 p.m. and I was still 3 centimeters. Like, when they did that check at 3, I was still 3 centimeters. The heart wasn't looking great. That was like the first time I got like emotional. Because I was just like, this isn't working. Like, how am I 3 centimeters right now when it's been this long and I've had this much medication? And so But and also alongside that, my epidural started to wear off on one side. And so I started getting like quite flustered because I knew that I had this induction medication pumping through me. And I like had PTSD from like the earlier on the previous night. So I was sort of like, okay, like I'm feeling it on this left hand side. And then they like sort of got me to lie on my side and then it sort of went away. But then it's like it really started to wear off and I was like, okay, we either need to top up my epidural or we're going to make the call to have a C-section and I'll get a spinal. Anyways, the call was made to have a C-section alongside the advice of the doctor. And I just remember Carmen walking back in after we had made that call and I just like burst into tears. But I don't know, I wasn't crying because I was upset that it wasn't going to plan. I think I was emotional because, you know, we were starting to hear murmurs of like Wynn not coping and obviously her health was my main priority and that was scary. But also like I've never had a surgery. I've never broken a bone. And I think for me, pushing a baby out was a lot less scary than getting like major abdominal surgery. And I also was thinking back to my mum, who had a C-section with my twin brothers. I remember her telling us a story of like the doctors like didn't give her enough of this medication and like of the spinal or something, and she could like sort of like feel them do something, and then they gave her too much. And I was just, and I was like again thinking about work, being like, how am I? I'm going to be in hospital for like 4 weeks or something. Like I just had no idea because I had done no education once again. I like didn't think I was going to be able to drive for 6 weeks and all these thoughts were running through my head. But we decided to have the C-section and that meant that they were like, we can get you in there in half an hour and you'll get the spinal, you'll be totally numb. And I was like, okay, sweet as, like give me the gas and I'll just make it through the next half an hour and we won't bother topping up this epidural. But then it ended up taking like an hour to get to the theater. And I think like as soon as we said like, yeah, it's C-section time, like for some reason the epidural just like totally wore off. And I think that the most traumatic part of my birth, if there was anything of that, was just like the amount of pain that I was in when I was like being wheeled into that theater. And it just made the whole thing, because it was considered an emergency C-section, but like there was no imminent threat to life sort of thing. So
I feel
like if I had still like been numb and I didn't have those contractions, I would have been okay. But honestly, it just felt like I had a massive contraction for like half an hour before that C-section. And it felt like, yeah, just when they were doing the spinal, like it was just all like quite a flustered experience. But then got the spinal and they were like, you know, again, my mum's words were like floating through my head because they were like spraying the cold spray on me. And they're like, could you feel that? And I was like, yeah, like I can definitely feel tingling. And they're like, yeah, no, you will be able to feel tingling. Can you feel cold? And I was like, I don't know, but can we just like wait a little bit? Like I just like was so scared that I was going to feel them cut me open. But anyways, then they like started to do it. And I was just like lying there, just like petrified sort of. And I remember like the lady telling one of her like assistants to like, she's like, okay, just push down as hard as you can at the top of her tummy. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so bizarre. Like, this is just crazy. I was also like extremely thirsty and had really bad shakes, but apparently, yeah, the shakes thing is common. I'm not sure how common the thirst thing is, but I like felt so dehydrated. Then she came out and they sort of showed her over to us. And that was another concerning thing to me because I really, you know, thought that would be like a big moment for me, like seeing her. But I honestly just was like, okay, she's here. It was very odd. There was like no tears. I think as well, because there wasn't a big scream and because I had been so flustered by the pain of it before the spinal, and I don't know, I was just quite out of it. There'd been like a lot of medication and that sort of thing. But yeah, so she was having, what did it say? She was flat. She was flat at birth or something. Anyway, she wasn't screaming. And then they sort of took her off to the side and I don't think I'd call it like resuscitation, but they gave her some oxygen, I think. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, they did the lactate test and she had a really bad like lactate blood score or something. So there were some talks of when going into NICU, but she improved really dramatically within the first few hours. So, yeah, she was born and sort of come and brought her over to me, and like there's videos, I think I sent one through to you, but like Carmen's videoing and I'm just like shivering and I say like, oh, I thought she was taking a photo, and I was like, oh, I should probably try and smile. And I remember looking back at that and I was like, oh, that's so sad. Like I was just so like, but now I'm like, now that I know, you know, once I was in recovery for an hour and like, you know, she latched onto my boob and everything, it was absolutely fine. But at the time, I was just like very much out of it.
And do you remember, like, I don't know, because I've had a C-section too. Do you remember any like pain or, because I know people think about C-sections and like you think about this huge abdominal surgery, which it is. And I know that you said like, you know, they were really cautious to make sure that you actually couldn't feel anything. But when they were actually doing the surgery, do you remember feeling anything at all?
There was no pain, but I did feel like, and they had explained to me, like, I will feel like you'll feel pulling or like sort of like rummaging a little bit. And like, but no. And I guess like to give some people peace of mind with the whole C-section thing, because I was petrified. I will, like, I am 80 to 90% sure that I would elect a C-section next time. And I guess, and that I guess goes to show that like it actually was totally fine. I was just scared because I hadn't been through it before. But no, there was no pain, and it wasn't overly scary. It was just different and kind of crazy.
And so you go to recovery, and I think you said that they, you know, help you lecture on and all of that sort of stuff. How long did you spend in recovery, and then what sort of happened once you went back to your room?
Yeah, so went into recovery, and they took Mac and Wynn to recovery so that Wynn could get skin on skin with one of us, and it wasn't going to be me. I don't know why it wasn't me. I don't know why. I was out of it, probably. So Mac ended up doing skin to skin with Wynn in recovery, and then I got wheeled into recovery, and then I got to do skin to skin, and I think we tried to latch her on in recovery. And then I think I remember Carmen like manually expressing colostrum or something. But like, I was just still shaking so much. And like the thirst was just so crazy for me. And I'm someone who just always gets really thirsty. But like Mac probably filled up a cup of water about 8 times, and I was just like guzzling water. Like Carmen said, I've never seen someone drink that much water. But so drunk heaps of water, and then we got into we got taken to our room, and again, like I'm fairly sure we were just she was sort of like just on my boob. We were doing skin to skin, and then we did have like the pediatrics doctor come and check her just because of that bad lactate score, and do those like startles and sucking tests. And yeah, there was a period where it was like we weren't sure if she would stay in the room with us that night. But yeah, she improved really quickly, which apparently newborns can do that. So that was amazing. But I remember, like, I knew that she had been like sucking on my boob, and like then I was watching the doctor like do the sucking test, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like she's not sucking her thumb. I was like, she's definitely been sucking on my boob. Like, come on, Wynn, suck her thumb. But yeah, and then it was kind of like time to go to sleep, and then the nurses like had said they'll wake me up every 3 hours or whatever it was to feed her. And I was lucky enough to that, because that was one thing I like didn't want to know. I really wanted to be with Mac, and I knew that if we stayed in the hospital, which we would have to do if I went to the hospital, I thought that Mac wouldn't be able to stay. But we were actually quite lucky that we sort of got away with Mac just sleeping on the little side seat. But yeah, on like the care, like another really healing thing of like the whole experience, like, you know, I was so desperate not to go to hospital, but the care that we received that night, because we only stayed one night, the care that we received that night was just like phenomenal. I ended up, we actually knew like one of the, like the head, like one of the head, like nurse midwives, we sort of knew her. And I ended up like following her on social media after the fact. And I remember the first time she like posted a story, like we had just maybe gotten home from the birthing center because we went there afterwards. And then like Jordan, who was the nurse, midwife, whatever, posted. And like just when I saw her face, I just like bursted into tears at home because like they were just so, so amazing and made it so amazing.
Yeah. That makes such a difference, I think, when you've got like, you know, a positive experience in hospital and you feel really well cared for the people that are looking after you. Yeah, I think makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. And how did you find going home? So you've had, obviously you've just given birth, you've been through like a pretty intense labor and then had a major surgery to give birth to your baby, and you stayed in hospital for one night. So what was it like going home? How were you feeling? Did you have a lot of pain with your C-section site? Like, yeah, talk us through the ins and outs of the next couple of days.
Yeah, so the day after, so we gave birth at like 4:45 and then in the evening, and then went to sleep that night. And the morning after, obviously they were keen, and I was keen to get me up, and like I was so keen to have a shower. And I was also extremely keen to get to the birthing center if we could. So I got up that morning, and I mean, it felt like it was just the sitting up and like moving yourself on the bed. Like that was like kind of, it was difficult to do. But then once I got up and like you feel a bit, I guess, unstable on your feet to some degree, but I felt pretty okay. And they were like, I was like really keen to have like a really big shower, but they told me I wasn't allowed to wash my hair. So I was like a bit gutted, but had a shower. And then I was told that I needed to wee twice before I was able to leave. So I literally like guzzled so much water because Carmen had said like, there's quite a few people that are keen to get to the birthing center today. And you're all trying to get discharged and there's only one room. So like the competitive nature of me came out and I was just like guzzling water. Anyways, we ended up getting discharged at about 4 and got all of our stuff together and headed off to the birthing center. But I do remember like that walk out of the hospital was when I kind of really realized the fact that it was quite a major surgery, because Mick like is 6 foot something and was just like walking as he normally would, and I was like a snail trying to like keep up. And I was like, Mick, you're gonna have to slow down because like this, it's actually quite hard to walk right now. So that was quite, I was like, wow, this is different.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, we spent our few days in the birthing center. And again, that was just so amazing. I'm so glad we got to go there. It was beautiful and just such a nice time. And then went home after that. And I guess like the first few days at home, it was just really, we have quite a low couch. So I would notice it when I would like try get up off the couch. But in terms of like walking and just pain, it wasn't too bad. Like I probably stopped taking Tramadol when I was at the birthing center, but I probably stopped that in the first few days at home. I've been just overall extremely pleasantly surprised by the recovery side of the C-section. I think it was a week before I even really stepped foot outside. But then when we got to that week mark, we just live like 500 meters down the road from a little park, and we really wanted to get our dog Cooper out to go for a run. So we walked down to the park and hit the tennis ball for him. And then, you know, every day we'd sort of do that. And then I just slowly started to increase how far I would walk. And yeah, my recovery has been really awesome. Like the scar is like so low down and it's actually not that big. And it's like, I look at that scar and I just love it. Like I love it because I think of Winnie and it's the best.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like almost like I've got like a little tattoo to remind me what happened to get her here.
Yeah. Amazing. And how were you going with your breastfeeding? So I know you mentioned earlier that she wasn't putting on a lot of weight for a little while. So how have you gone, since having her with your breastfeeding journey?
Yeah, so she only lost like 2% of her birth weight in those first few days. So she had done really well, but I do think that that was because we, like, she would feed and then we would top her up with the heaps of colostrum that I collected. Mm-hmm. So that was just like a really good start. And then from like in those first few weeks, like, she put on amazing weight. My milk came in probably on like our first day at home. So that was like on the fourth day or something like that. But my boobs were only sore for like one day, which was, again, one thing that I was really pleasantly surprised by. I thought my boobs would just be like sore for weeks and just massive. But my boobs have already settled down in terms of like being a pretty normal size for me. She was putting on good weight. But I think that, once I also was like doing a lot of social things as well as the work stuff, and I just think that I started to push out the time between feeds because I wasn't super confident to feed her out in public, and because I was doing so many things, like, yeah, I think my supply maybe suffered a bit because I wasn't feeding frequently enough. And also I think that I wasn't maybe holding her in like an optimum position. So we ended up having a lactation consultant come just because, she wasn't there was one week, maybe it was like about her, between her third and her fourth week, where she put on very minimum weight. And then between her fourth and her fifth, she put on like no weight. So Carmen was like, I think we should just get a lactation consultant in to sort of like get it sorted, because those first 6 weeks with breastfeeding are really important. So that was quite stressful because breastfeeding to me is like just something I really, really want to do, and I love it. And I was just starting to get concerned, like, what's going on here? Because she had such good weight gain previously, but looking at it now and after having that lactation consultant come, like, there were reasons as to why she wasn't putting on weight. Like, it coincided with like a very big and busy few weeks of my life. I've been committing to like just being at home a lot. And as soon as she starts to stir, my first point of call is like giving her the boob. She's doing so well with her feeding again now. I do think that our latch was also a little bit average. Like, I was sort of holding her, and I forgot that like you're supposed to have their tummy sort of against your tummy. So her tummy was sort of facing up to the ceiling and the latch was just really shallow. And I also think my letdown was super forceful, but that made me think that I had good supply. But I think that after the letdown came, it was a little bit average. Just increasing those feeds has increased that supply more. But like, she only feeds, like, some nights she'll only feed once through the night, and then, but she's been an amazing sleeper. And I think now, like, I'm not going to stress that much about it, but about the weight thing, because she's actually a pretty happy baby. And those 2 weeks when she was not that happy was when she wasn't putting on weight. So I will know, like, just because we don't see Carmen anymore and Plunkett doesn't come as often, I was like, oh, how am I going to know if she's putting on weight? But you'll know, like, I just know that I'll know, because she's been so happy the last week or so, which has been amazing. But I'm pretty sure feeding's going good again.
Yeah. Awesome. And has there been anything that you've used either for yourself or for Wynn that you've been like, oh my God, every single mum needs this if they can? Like, what products or things have you done that you'd recommend?
A wipeable change mat is amazing, because honestly, she every time I take that nappy from under her bum, she wheezes or poos. No matter how long I leave it there for, I don't know what it is about that. And then I love baby wearing, and I thought that I was going to be going into work like a lot more than what I probably have been, because I've realized now that I can just do my job from home. But so I was really keen to get her to enjoy the baby wearing thing. In those first few weeks, we use the soft, what is it, Chico? We use that Chico Baby wrap that you can actually buy off Your Birth Project store. And that was really cool to just like have her close and be able to get things done or take her down to the park. And it's like, it's because Wynn was like only 7 pounds 6, like, and she's quite small. The carrier that I use more often now is the Artie Pope carrier, because we're going on more like long walks and it's got structure and it holds her in there. But in those early days, that wrap, like the soft wrap carriers were really amazing. And then what else have I written? Oh, you only asked for one. But I'd also say a temperature gauge. The temperature gauge, because we live in an old house and it can get quite cold. And also just the bath. Like, I wasn't sure. Like, Wynn and I have a bath most nights together. And I like my bath to be really hot, but I have to definitely make it colder for her.
Awesome. And is there anything, like, if there's a mum listening to this podcast and she's like pregnant and she's going to be giving birth soon and she's feeling anxious about just like birth in general, is there anything that you'd tell her, anything that you'd suggest doing, like, now that you've done it, you've been through it and you're out the other side, what would you go back and tell yourself?
Everyone experiences labor like so differently. And you know, there's people out there that I had friends that were walking around at 4 centimeters and they weren't, like, they weren't even, they didn't even know. Yet I labored for like 24 hours and didn't go past 3. And it's no fault of your own or your baby's. It's everyone just experiences it differently. And the only thing that you need to worry about is, or be, or look forward to is, you know, the gift that you get on the other side of it. Everyone's going to have such a different journey. And like, for me, listening to all the positive birth stories and like manifesting this drug-free birth was, I don't regret it at all, because like, I loved learning about that stuff. And I loved, you know, believing that I would do it at the time. But in the moment, and what I know now is that having a cesarean was still a beautiful experience. It was just different. And I would choose it probably next time, because I could see how beautiful it would be if I wasn't, you know, in that world of pain. Like, we don't know why Wynn didn't come. We don't know why she didn't come vaginally, but she didn't. And she came out the sunroof, and that is fine. And the recovery has been amazing. I would also say, like, I loved being active through my pregnancy, and Carmen said to me that staying active and walking and doing what I did in terms of that was plays a really big part in terms of a cesarean recovery. So I don't know. It was, it just was what it was. And it's pretty, it was a cool experience regardless, I suppose.
Amazing. Well, I have absolutely loved speaking with you this morning, Hannah, and I know that there's going to be so many people out there who just really get so much joy from listening to your episode and hearing you reflect on your birth and what it's been like for you as a mum for the, you know, last little while. So I'm very grateful that you've taken the time out of your day to do this, and thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope I have not rambled too much, but I have been in so many, like, I just know exactly what it's like listening to these podcasts, and I'm so excited for you all, whether you've had babies, you're about to have a baby, you're trying to have a baby. Just, it's such a cool time.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you've enjoyed listening, and I'm so grateful that you chose to have me and Hannah in your ears this week. I will be back with another birth story episode for you very soon, but in the meantime, if you are looking to create your best birth, make sure you go and check out Your Birth Project, and I will be back with another episode for you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.